This is Steve Braswell, and welcome to my podcast. I'm glad you're joining me today. We are in the middle of a series that I have called The Seven Secrets of Contentment. Contentment, I believe, is one of the biggest needs of our day. And so we're looking at seven different passages, seven different secrets. Today we come to number five, Let Your Shepherd Do His Job. Based on John chapter 10, I'll read verses 7 through 13. Jesus says, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep." Now picture a sheep pen, rocks piled up to make a wall all the way around a big area, rocks up to, say, almost shoulder height to keep the sheep in and to keep them safe. And then there's an opening on one end. All the other part is closed. There's an opening on one end just big enough for a person to sit there and block the entrance. And that is Jesus for us. We are the sheep in the pen. He is the gate for the sheep. He says, "All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief only comes to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full," or have it in great abundance. Life in the Gospel of John, eternal life, is not life that starts when we go to heaven and then lasts forever. Yes, that's part of it, but it's not the quantity of life that he's talking about. It's the quality of life. It's a new quality of life that begins right here, right now, when you believe in Jesus, when you trust him to be your gate. And so he says, "I have come that they may have life and have it to the full," have abundant life. There's so many people who think that Christians are the saddest people on earth. They're always mad about something. They're always upset about something. They're always fighting about something. And there are a lot of Christians I know who fit that description. But that is not what Jesus is talking about here. Jesus is talking about giving us the best kind of life possible right now. And you know, if we believe that and live like that, the church would be much more attractive than it is. But he says, "I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." In verse 11, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep." You know the difference between someone who is just doing a job just to get paid, just doing the least possible amount just to get by. Maybe when the supervisor's not looking, they don't do much at all. Compare that with someone whose heart is in what they're doing and they give it their all. He says, that's the kind of shepherd I am, not just a hired hand. Now, that is from John chapter 10, where Jesus says he is the good shepherd. I want you to think with me for just a few moments about the three times in the New Testament that Jesus is called a shepherd. Okay? The good shepherd in John chapter 10, then the great shepherd in Hebrews 13, 20 and 21, and then the chief shepherd in 1 Peter 5, 1 through 4. The good shepherd, the great shepherd, the chief shepherd. Now, he's a good shepherd in all of those, but what's the difference among those three? Well, it's interesting how the good shepherd matches up with Psalm 22. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The great shepherd matches up with Psalm 23, the living shepherd who lives for his sheep. And the chief shepherd matches up with Psalm 24, the exalted shepherd who will return for his sheep. So there's three psalms in a row. The emphasis on the good shepherd is his cross. The emphasis for the great shepherd is his crook as a shepherd. I'm not talking about a thief kind of crook, but the crook in the shepherd's crook, he would use that to guide the sheep. And then in Psalm 24, the chief shepherd, the emphasis is on his crown, that he's going to return for his sheep. So the good shepherd emphasizes the way of justification. The great shepherd emphasizes the way of sanctification. And the chief shepherd emphasizes the way of glorification. You see, the good shepherd has saved us from the penalty of sin. The great shepherd is saving us from the power of sin. And then the chief shepherd will save us from the presence of sin. Jesus is all of those to us. There is no shepherd like Jesus. Now, let's go back to John chapter 10 and think about Jesus as the good shepherd. I want to point out to you in John chapter 10, 8 things that Christ, the good shepherd, does for you. And we're focusing on contentment. So my point today is, to be content, you need to let the good shepherd do his job. And so let's look at what the good shepherd's job is. And just let Jesus be your good shepherd. Focus on him as your good shepherd and what he's doing for you. Let him do that job, and you will find the secret of being content. Okay, what is his job? John chapter 10, 8 things that Christ the good shepherd does for us. Number 1, verse 3, Christ has called you. Beginning verse 1, it says, "Very truly I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out." And as Jesus was using this image to speak to people, they knew what he was talking about. They could picture nearby or where they grew up a sheep pen and a shepherd, very common thing in that time. If Jesus were talking today, he would change that image to something that we're all familiar with, but he used that image in that day. So the first thing that he does as our good shepherd is Christ has called you. Verse 3, he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Second thing, kind of building on verse 3 and then going to verse 14, "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep." So second thing is Christ knows you by name. It is true that in the Middle East, when a shepherd has a group of sheep, or maybe they're sheep mixed with goats or some other animal, those sheep know that shepherd. And when that shepherd calls them, he doesn't even have to call them individually, but he calls out, they know to follow him. They know that that's my shepherd, and I need to stay attached to my shepherd. Same thing with us. Christ knows you by name. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. And notice how he compares it to just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. The unique relationship of the Son and the Father. And then that he compares that to the unique relationship of the shepherd and the sheep, Jesus and us. And he knows you by name. Isn't it special to have somebody remember your name? I know that when I served as a pastor we had visitors to come, and I'd meet new people. I would try my best to find out their name and then remember it and then call them by name. I know that when I've been in situations where somebody meets me and then a few weeks later I meet them and they say, "Well, hello, Steve." It impresses me that they remembered my name. I don't expect everybody to do that, and I didn't do that perfectly, but you know, it impresses you. There's something about hearing your name called that's special to you. Well, Christ knows you by name. Then the third thing, verses 3-5, Christ leads you in the best way. Not as a stranger would lead you, but as your shepherd leads you. He leads you in the best way. Look at verse 4. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they'll run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used this figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them." See, there's a difference between Jesus, the good shepherd, and someone who is a stranger, someone who is a thief and a robber, someone who does not have our best interest at heart. See, Christ leads you in the best way, the way that is the very best for you. It may not feel that way. Sometimes we may doubt that, may not even believe that. But in the end, by faith, we see that Christ our shepherd has led us in the best way. Then number 4, verses 9 and 10, Christ gives you the best gifts. What are those? Look at verses 9 and 10. "I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full." So Christ gives you the best gifts: salvation, pasture, life to the full. No one else can give you those gifts. So let your good shepherd be your shepherd. Now, it's interesting as I read this and think about that image of the gate and the sheep going in through the gate, and then they're enclosed in this pen. And you might think, well, that's kind of like being in jail. I've lost my freedom. I'm enclosed in this pen. I can't go anywhere else. Shut in. Well, sometimes people think of the Christian life in that way. It's too restrictive. I have lost my freedom. All I hear are thou shalt nots, you know, and so I can't go anywhere or do anything. But notice what Jesus says as the good shepherd. Yes, they come in, but then they come in and go out and find pasture. He lets us come and go and then leads us to the places, even outside the pen, that are the very best for us. So Christ gives you the best gifts. Then number 5, verse 11 and verses 14 to 18 and following, Christ gave his life for you. Now, I'm going to read all these verses because this is a very important part of being a good shepherd. Verse 11, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." Okay? A good shepherd, it's not just a 9-to-5 job. It's not just, well, somebody told me to do this, so I'll go through the motions and do it. No, the good shepherd knows his sheep and loves his sheep and cares for his sheep by giving the very best for the sheep. And so, when called upon, he lays down his life for the sheep. This is the image of the shepherd, and of course, a good shepherd would do that, would lay down his life for a sheep. But of course, Jesus is talking about more than that. He's talking about that day yet to come when he'll be lifted up on that cross, and he indeed will give his life for the sheep. So Christ gave his life for you. Now read on, verse 12. "The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep." See the contrast between him and Jesus? Verse 14. "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep." He repeats that. "I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen." That's interesting. I thought Jesus just had the one pen with the sheep there. No, he said, "I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice." As time went on and the Gospels unfolded and the story of the church unfolded, who do you think those other sheep might be? Well, it seems like it would be those who were not just the Jews, like the people he was talking to then. And of course, as the church grew, it included many Gentiles or non-Jews, Read the book of Acts and see how it started in Jerusalem and then gradually unfolded, and many Gentiles were included. And he says, I have other sheep. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice. And notice, there will be one flock and one shepherd. All those things that they think divide them so much now, the Jews and the Gentiles, they have different laws, they have different menus when they eat. One has a temple in Jerusalem, one does not. All these things that divide them. But then when they see me as their shepherd, there's unity. One flock and one shepherd. Verse 17, the reason my Father loves me is that I, and he repeats it again, I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. Jesus is saying, you know, as time goes on and I'm nailed to that cross and those soldiers stand by and it seems like they are taking my life, but no, I'm laying it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. What would that be? That would be Jesus' resurrection from the dead. This command I received from my Father. The Jews who heard these words were again divided. Many of them said, he is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him? But others said, these are not the sayings of someone possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? This is in John chapter 10. Of course, in the previous chapter, Jesus had healed a man born blind. And so his signs in the Gospel of John point to his identity, who he really is. Then verse 22, you might not be familiar with this, but then came the festival of dedication at Jerusalem. Do you know what that was? That was Hanukkah. So Hanukkah was being celebrated in Jesus' time. So sometimes we non-Jewish Christians think of that as something that came later, but it's actually refers to special events that happened before the time of Jesus. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple courts walking in Solomon's colonnade. The Jews who were there gathered around him saying, how long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly. It's interesting, Jesus' protagonists say things like this sometimes, and as we read it, we think, what more do you need? Look at what he's done. Look at what he's already said. But yet, when I sometimes get down on them too much, I just look in the mirror. I see, how much have I seen God do? How much have I heard from God? And yet there are times that I don't believe as well. But they said, tell us plainly. Jesus answered, I did tell you, but you do not believe. The works I do in my Father's name testify about me, but you do not believe. Why? Because you are not my sheep. You see, back to that image of the sheep and the shepherd. So, number five was Christ gave his life for you. Christ proved he was a good shepherd, not just by living a good life and teaching good things, but by actually laying down his very life for you. What more could he do? Then number six, verse 27, Christ owns you and will never abandon you. Verse 27, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. Christ owns you and will never abandon you. Now, this thing about ownership, that might not sound good to you. Sometimes it doesn't sound good to me because I want to be in control of myself. I want to say it's my life, my body, my choice. No one else can tell me what to do. And yet, Christ laid down his life for me. Christ is my good shepherd. Christ owns me. And he does it for my good. And he will never abandon me. Then number seven, verse 28, Christ will not let anyone take you away. I give them eternal life and they shall never perish. No one will snatch them out of my hand. Isn't that great? that Jesus has us safe in his very hand. And if anybody wanted to come and snatch us away, no one is powerful enough to snatch us out of Jesus' hand. And that leads us to then number 8. Christ will keep you in his hand forever. I just read verse 28. Add to that verse 29. My Father, who has given them to me, is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I like that in verse 28, I'm safe in Jesus' hand. In verse 29, I'm safe in the Father's hand. And he follows that with verse 30 as, I and the Father are one. What greater safety could I have? And that's what leads to contentment. To let this good shepherd do his job, be my shepherd, in the end, hold me safely in his hand so that nobody can snatch me away. Now, I want to finish with a poem by Helen Steiner Rice. The reason I'm reading this is the title of it is Faith for Dark Days. This whole idea of Jesus being a shepherd reminds us that we need a shepherd. Why do we need a shepherd? Well, there are robbers and thieves around us. There are hired people who want to do us harm. There are people who don't want to give us the best gifts, who don't want us to be protected. And beyond that, there's even myself, my own sin, that wants me to run the other way and not submit to Jesus. In the dark days, it's even the hardest to do that. So just listen to this poem, Faith for Dark Days. When dark days come, and they come to us all, we feel so helpless and lost and small. We cannot fathom the reason why, and it's futile for us to try to find the answer, the reason or cause, for the master plan is without any flaws. And when the darkness shuts out the light, we must lean on faith to restore our sight. For there's nothing that we need to know if we have faith that wherever we go, God will be there to help us bear our disappointments, pain, and care. For he is our shepherd, our Father, our guide. And you're never alone with the Lord at your side. So may the great physician attend you, and may his healing completely mend you. Friends, that's a secret of contentment, to know that this good shepherd, this loving shepherd who laid down his life for us, is always near and will never leave us. So just let that shepherd be himself in your life. Let Christ, the good shepherd, do his job. Thanks so much for spending this time with me today. Next week, we look at secret number 6, find God's faithfulness in the middle of suffering. I hope you'll be able to join me next week.